Hello everyone, my name's Dean, I'm an addict. First, I'd just like to welcome anyone who's new to the fellowship. Welcome to NA. I thought it'd be, I don't know, good idea, it'd be good in this, because I swear a lot, but I'll try and hold it back a little bit. When I first come here, I'd done everything what people said, don't look at the differences, you know what I mean, look at the similarities, not the differences, and I come in here and I thought it was different. I thought, you might be able to get it, but I won't be able to get it. Your life weren't as bad as mine, and you didn't use like me, you know what I mean, and that's how I sort of looked at it. But some things that some people said in the room, it touched me. I didn't understand what they were saying, but something happened to me inside. Something just broke because I was frozen. Something happened inside, and it got through a little bit to me where something started to happen. And I didn't want to come here and get abstinence. That was not what I wanted. I just wanted some relief from using Class A drugs. I thought it was all right to go and have a bevy and smoke a bit of weed, because nothing wrong with a bevy and a bit of weed. And I tried to do that, but every time I did, I'd end up back on a bit of gear and a bit on crack, you know what I mean? And it was people in the rooms were telling me, suggesting to me that abstinence was the only way, but I didn't want abstinence. I just wanted some relief. I thought it was about the drugs, didn't think it was about me. I thought the disease of addiction was a cop-out. It was just a way of blaming something else instead of taking responsibility for all the shitty, crappy things that I'd done throughout my life. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to punish myself and feel real shit, because that's how bad I felt about myself. With all the shame and guilt and the remorse that I felt around what I put my family through and my loved ones. So my dean asked me last year to do this. He said, when do you want to do it? He goes, you can do it in January, February, March, April, or May. And picked fucking May. I wish I'd picked January now. You know what I mean? I'll just tell you a bit about it. You know, I hate going into war stories and stuff like that, because I don't think it's... But I need to give people identification, you know what I mean? I grew up in a family of two brothers and a sister. And very early, me mum brought another two girls into the house. So I had three sisters eventually. And I was the youngest, and I was spoiled, and I got everything that I wanted. Not everything I wanted, but I got a lot of stuff that I wanted, but it was still never enough. Everyone else had more than me. I wanted to live with my mates' families. I wanted to be in that gang. I wanted that girlfriend, then I wanted that girlfriend. And I was just never, ever happy with anything. I was quite shy and insecure. Would have never told you that. You know, and I'd had a fight with you, I'd had a fought with you if you had to try and challenge me on that kind of stuff. Just nothing was ever enough for me. You know, and I found drugs at the age of 11. And it turned me into the person I thought I wanted to be, how I wanted to feel. I felt confident. I could have a laugh and a joke. And I could do things without feeling... I'm scared, basically. I didn't know that then, but that's what I was. I was scared of the world. And drugs sucked that away for me. You know, very quickly, it progressed. You know, and I picked up needles. You know, and I was injecting while I was still in school. So it was very young. It grabbed hold of me very young. You know what I mean? And all the way through, everything he ever used, I thought I had control. And I thought I could stop whenever I wanted to. I just didn't want to, because I liked the effect of it. It went until later on, I think it was around about 17, and I went to doctors because I didn't want to be using anymore. I could see where my life was going, and all my mates were going to jail, doing things that I didn't want to be doing. So I went to doctors for help, and he said I was too young to get any help. So I just have to try and do something myself, basically. And I couldn't, you know, and I ended up going to drug services at the age of 18, getting on a methadone script, and them telling me I'd be on it a couple of months, and you could get me clean, they'd detox me and get me clean, and I could go and live a normal, productive life. And 18, 20 years later, I'm still on methadone, you know. as much as I want, basically, using every day on top, whatever I could get my hands on. You know, it become a very lonely, scary place where I lived, you know what I mean? My veins had all gone, you know, so I was shooting wherever I could get. Just fucking crazy. And my biggest prayer of the night was not to wake up the next day, you know, because I couldn't go on anymore, you know. And I was living in a crack den, you know, and a girl come home one night who was living with my pal's sister, and said she'd been to a meeting, and I was like, what the fuck's a meeting? She said, what's that? And she was like, yeah, I've just been to an NA meeting, people just exactly like you. Done what you've done, felt like you feel, and think how you think. And I was like, oh, X, can't be fucking people like that, you know what I mean? I think the thing that sort of stuck out to me, because a couple of days passed by, and so we're going to meetings every night, coming home all lit up and fucking dead excited, and I'm sitting there thinking, what the fuck's going on with her? And I offered her a pipe one night, and she said no. And that was like fucking really unheard of, you know what I mean? Someone saying no to a pipe, you know what I mean? So that's what stuck with me more than what she was saying to me. It was the fact that she said no, and I knew she was exactly like me, and she could never say no to using. And a few weeks down the line, I asked her to take me to a meeting, and I came to a meeting, and it was like, it was in the YMCA, and it was a big like conference room, a big like armchairs, and everyone's sitting there with like suits and just really looking healthy, and I'm just like dying in my chair, you know what I mean, like 9 stone, big beard, curly hair, big wog of head, just like looked how I felt, you know what I mean, just felt like a piece of shit, I'd just come off the floor, and that's how I felt about myself. And I remember the guy sat next to me and he was reading out the card, and the fucking shame I felt in that moment, it was like, please just go over there and read it, don't be sitting next to me and read it, because I was that self-obsessed, you know what I mean, and sweat was dripping off me, you know. I had to, remember 8 doors, I had to take t-shirts and meetings with me, because halfway through the meeting I'd have to go to the toilet and change my t-shirt, because I'd be drenched, just self-obsessed to death. It was horrendous, because I'd lived the last 10 years musing on my own, doing it on my own, really, really isolated, so to be around people, it was scary. It was really, and looking back in hindsight, I don't know how the fuck I got through that stuff, man. You know what I mean? It was like, someone had told me it had been like that, I don't think I'd have been interested in coming. You know what I mean? Because I wouldn't have known what was on offer as a result of doing it. I think like it was just some people said stuff. Most of the things people said in there, I didn't believe. Thought they were chatting bubbles. But there was a couple of lads in there who really like touched me, broke through me kind of thing. I knew they'd been where they'd been, because you just know when someone's being honest, you know, you feel it kind of thing. And it broke through a lot of my denial. But I still thought I could do it my way. You know, I thought, I ain't getting a sponsor, I'm not doing anywhere near them steps, and I'm going to smoke a bit of weed and drink as well, because that ain't a problem. I tried that, and every time I did, I used on top, and it took me a few times to sort of realise that I can't use anything. You know, I started to sink in, and he started to drop what people were saying to me in meetings, that this was an abstinence-based programme, and I can't control any mind or mood altering substance that I used. And that wasn't good news for me, because I didn't want that, but I didn't want to go, but already in a couple of months, because I was on gallons of methadone when I came in, it took me about 6 or 7 months to clean up, coming to meetings every night, going out of town, because we only had a few meetings in where I was from, going out of town, going to meetings, and I started to build up this support with people. There were people who were coming in around about the same time, it was 3 of us, and we'd done loads of service in the same town together. And still all 3 of us are about, which is quite fucking a miracle, that, because I see how many people come and go, and for 3 of us to still be around. That was in 2008, and I've used once since then. I was 2 years clean, just broke up in a relationship, couldn't handle how I felt, and I lived with my brother at the time, and he drank, he's not an addict, and I just walked in the kitchen, there's a bottle of whiskey, and I drank it. But as soon as I drank it, he had to drink, get some relief. As soon as I did, it was like, oh, lad, you fucking knobhead, what have you done? You know what I mean? I was probably coming down here about a week later for the convention. I remember ringing my pal up and saying to him, I'm not coming. And he's going, "Why not?" I said, "Views." Okay. I said, "Views." And he goes, "What do you mean, you've used? Don't sound like, when do you use?" And I'm like, "Just now." He's like, "You don't sound like you do." Because I've only had one up to now. And he said, "I'm going to bring your mate down to get round." As soon as he did that, I panicked. Throwing a whiskey down my throat. By the time he came, I couldn't even answer the door, man. You know what I mean? But they sat with me. This is what I got from people in here. You know, they never gave up on me. They sat with me till I sobered up and then dragged me to a meeting that night. And I ain't new since. But what that did, it motivated me into knowing that I needed to do this stuff what you were talking about in here. Because I did, I was really reluctant, I took it really easy. And that's when I started to feel motivated into looking at myself and going through the step work, you know, and going through that stuff. It's quite painful to see the truth. First of all, step one, just smashed all my denial around a lot of stuff, you know, because I put the drugs down and picked up gambling and went at that full tilt, I know, and I've struggled with that all the way through recovery. You know, my last step one was around that stuff, and thankfully I've had some relief from it as a result, you know, and I've accepted I can't do that stuff, and it beats me every time I do, same as drugs. Yeah, you know, it's been amazing, because my life was just, it was fucking horrendous. It was horrendous, really was. And you get threats off the doctor saying, "If you carry on doing what you're going to do, you're going to lose your leg, you're going to lose it." And I believe him, because I could see the state of it. I believed him, you know what I mean? And yeah, an hour after coming out of the doctor's surgery, I'd just fucking go and carry on and go and do it again, because couldn't stop, you know what I mean? Mum passed away. I couldn't get the hospital to see her, because using was more important. You know, this is the woman I love more than anything in the world now, I've done anything for. Yeah, I couldn't get, you know, sitting there waiting for the dealer to turn up was more important than getting to the hospital. And then when she passed away, fucking shame when I felt around that stuff. And like, when I cleaned up, that stuff crippled me, man. Crippled me, absolutely crippled me. It's took a lot of work on myself to sort of find some acceptance, and it still hurts. I still feel all that stuff, but it's not like it was. It doesn't absolutely cripple me today. You know what I mean? You know, when I've been able to sit down with family members, you know what I mean, who are tortured, not tortured physically, but just tortured mentally through my addiction. You know, I remember sitting down with my sister and making amends to her and asking her what it was like for her. And she was just sat there and just streams of tears. And said she just that expectation of every time the phone went, she thought it was going to be either police saying I was dead, found dead, been beaten up, or I was in jail. You know what I mean? And I never ever thought about any of my family when I was in what I was in. You know, I never thought about what it was doing to them. It's just all about me and that way I could get the next bit from. You know, and that was quite a powerful moment. You know, it was my boss at the time as well, who I'd worked for over 20 years. Because I managed to work. I don't know how the fuck I managed to work, but I worked. I think it was because that was my graft, that was my money. That's how I made out. And I'm sitting down with him and making amends. And this is a guy I hated. I thought he took the piss out of me. I thought he just like proper huge resentments, loads of them with him. And after seeing my inventory in it, seeing how it was actually me who took the piss, me being really selfish, me turning up load whenever I wanted to, me turning up late, me going whenever I wanted, me stealing off him virtually every day, just doing whatever I wanted. I sat down and owned all this behaviour to him. And that was a really scary moment, because I just thought, I'm either going to go to jail, he's going to ring the police, I'm going to go to jail, I'm going to get beat up because of a family run business and they're all big steadheads and they work out in the gym and back of the work, and I'm going to get sacked. And the guy sat there opposite me, his tears streaming down his face, and I asked him how I could make this up to him, how I could make this right with him, how could I to come up with some kind of financial agreement with him, to pay him back the money that I'd stole off him for all them years. And he just said to me, I don't want a penny off you. He goes, how I've seen you change over the last couple of years and what you've been doing is more than enough for me, just to see the way you've turned your life around. I don't want anything off you. Wait till the next day. I'll finish on this. Wait till the next day that I realised how the amends worked. I went up to the office and he gave me a box of money and said, take that downstairs with you. And as I walked downstairs, at the moment of clarity, it was like I just took back the fear that had instilled in the man that I was just going to continue to steal off him, because he knew he'd caught me a few times, sacked me, brought me back. And it was then that I realised I'd just fixed what I'd broken all them years. I'd taken back the fear that I'd instilled in him. I could go on forever, but time's up. If anyone's new to the fellowship, just keep coming back, man. Do what people suggest, because we don't suggest it just for our sake. This stuff saves your life, you know. I was dying when I came here, you know, and I've got a life today, so thanks very much for listening.